With Arnor fallen and Gondor in decline and under increasing attacks from outside, it's looking bad for Numenorean civilization. Yet it's also during this period that new sources of hope begin to arise in Middle-earth. From the founding of Erebor to the birth of the White Council, amongst other important events and trends. Join us as we continue our exploration of Middle-earth's Third Age. The Tolkien Road, Episode 206, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 4. Hello everyone, welcome to the Tolkien Road, Episode 206, The History of the Third Age, Part 4. Greta, how are you?
Hey, I'm terrific. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Super.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Well, I bet you are. You got a nice cup of coffee right there.
Got a fresh cup of coffee.
Fresh cup of Joe, as they say.
It's so good. Drinking it out of my favorite mug. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Jane Eyre
mug.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jane Eyre. Mm-hmm. Charlotte.
And Charlotte Bronte. Is that the right way to, like, is her name spelled correctly on there? Because I don't see the umlaut.
Umlaut's on the E.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
I always wondered how.
I know.
What that means.
It feels like it should be on the O.
Because we both know a little German, so we understand how the umlaut works. But this is an English name, so.
Right. Yeah. It's a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an umlaut there, so I think we're good.
Well, this is not a podcast about Jane Eyre or the Brontes.
Unfortunately. I think we should start one, though.
This, gosh darn it, is a podcast about Tolkien.
Yeah.
So.
I like Tolkien, too.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Tolkien liked Bronte. English folk.
I don't know. Tolkien was pretty opinionated, so I have no idea.
I think he would like him some gothic.
I'm not saying he wouldn't. I just don't know. Like, I'm saying... He had opinions, you know, on
Oh, I know, very like you said, so. Very strong opinions. That's true. But I think I would like to talk to Tolkien about Jane Eyre.
Well, amongst many other topics.
Well, that too, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what we do here on the Tolkien Road. We try to, we try to have a little dialogue with Tolkien. From beyond the grave, even though the good professor is no longer with us, he's left us a wonderful treasure trove of works and letters and other things, and so we do a deep dive on all things Tolkien on this episode and try to better access his mind, the mind of the great man. So
that's a good lead-in.
Yeah.
I like that.
So if you liked that lead-in, then please support the Tolkien Road on Patreon.
Well done.
Just like our newest patron, Matt L.
Thank you, Matt.
Shout out to Matt L. Thank you for your generous patronage, as well as a couple of returning patrons, Eric B. and Caitlin, a.k.a. T with Tolkien.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you both for coming back. It's, you know, we completely understand that from time to time, and especially this year with the, you know, with the way that the COVID-19 pandemic hit everybody, and, you know, if it didn't hit us on a... physical level, it hit us on a economic level in a lot of cases. So we're just very appreciative that that people, you know, we understand that people may have to drop off, but we always love it to see people come back and continue their patronage. So it means a lot to us, and
it
is
really
very
does.
Very encouraging to us as well. So thank you.
Yes, thanks,
thank you
guys.
To new patron Matt L, and thanks to returning patrons Eric B and Caitlin.
Thank you.
If you do not currently support us on Patreon and would like to, head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out more details. We just revamped our tiers and perks over there, so you'll want to be sure to check it out. There's some cool little perks that we're offering now that we weren't necessarily offering before, so we're excited about those. We did this little thing here recently for as a loyalty thing, Greta, where we're going to start doing... loyalty perks as well, meaning like when somebody is a patron for a specific period of time, then they're going to get a perk every time that period of time repeats. So like an annual perk, if you will, right? A new annual perk, if
That's
you will.
That's cool. I like that.
So as a loyalty reward. So so anyway, I don't want to tell you all too much about it right here, right now, but head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to learn more about how becoming a patron benefits you in some really cool ways. Win-win.
Yeah, and it benefits us, so yeah.
Yeah.
Win-win-win.
Win-win.
Yes.
all the winning. We're all winning together.
Mm-hmm.
If you're unable to support us via Patreon, you can also support us in the following ways. Tip jar. There's a leave a tip button on each episode on our website, a nice big blue leave a tip button, and it's really easy to leave us a tip for that particular episode if you'd like to. Thanks to those who have left us some generous tips recently. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate that.
Very much.
And then subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All of the above.
All of the above.
Please right. And thank you.
Thank you. All right. So, SpeakPipe, I actually deactivated SpeakPipe on the website recently because there was a bug. It wasn't working quite as I wanted it to. But we'll still absolutely take voice messages if people want to find other ways to send us voice messages. We will make sure to play them on the on the next episode. We recently had a voice message from Paige H. So I believe Paige is a one of our patrons. So that was really cool to receive that from her. And we're gonna play that now, and we'll respond to it. All right.
Yay!
So.
It's fun hearing voices.
I love it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Hi, John. Hi, Greta. Hope you guys can access this file all right. I'm just trying a voice recorder on my phone. I am currently listening to the Fellowship of the Ring and then the corresponding podcast you have for each chapter. I recently finished reading A Shortcut to Mushrooms and was struck by something my pastor said in a sermon the Sunday after I completed reading this chapter. He just casually mentioned the story of the Good Samaritan, and I couldn't help but notice that there were certain parallels between that parable and the chapter, namely that two people or entities you would expect to help Frodo didn't actually help him at all. Gandalf being absent, and the elven folk unwilling even to give him advice, and that help came from unexpected places. Anyways, just wanted to know your thoughts, and wanted to say thanks for doing all that you do. Keep up the good work, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Paige.
Yeah, thank you.
It's wonderful to hear your voice. Mm-hmm. I love that observation.
I need a refresher.
So Farmer Maggot and A Shortcut to Mushrooms, which is like, I think, chapter 3 or 4.
It's also my most favorite titled chapter. I love
it. You do love mushrooms.
I do love mushrooms.
Chapter 3 or 4 and Lord of the Rings, right? Like early on in Lord of the Rings. And it's when I think Frodo and Sam and Pippin, I believe, are they're traveling through the Shire, mm-hmm. Kind of the beginning of their journey, traveling through the Shire, and they come to, they need some help. Like, they know the Black Riders are out to get them at that point, or they have some suspect that somebody is out to get them, and...
So this is before they've arrived at Bree?
Oh, yes, well before they've arrived at Bree. Okay. Farmer Maggot is another hobbit, right? He's a hobbit farmer.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, Farmer Maggot ends up being like kind of a friendly figure towards them and helps them out in some important ways. So I think the parallel that Paige was trying to explain was with the Good Samaritan, right? The story mm-hmm. of the Good Samaritan. Just mm-hmm. to refresh everybody, and I don't have the scriptural passage pulled up here, but the Good Samaritan is the story from one of the Gospels, maybe it's in multiple Gospels, where a man, let me just pull this up, let me Google this so I can read it, and we can make good sense of this. Good Samaritan.
Yeah, it's one of those parables I think that's very well known in general, mm-hmm. but I feel like the details can get a little fuzzy if you haven't read it in a while.
Yeah, it's, well, sometimes, yeah, that's how these things happen when you mm-hmm. don't go back to the source is, yeah. The details can get a little squishy, but
yeah.
most people know the general idea, like the idea of the Good Samaritan is that, you know, we're supposed to be willing to help those who are in trouble, right? Yeah. Like kind of go out of our way to help those who are in trouble, who are in distress.
Yeah, regardless of like how we feel about their nationality or culture or whatever.
Right. And yeah. And as with so many of the things, the teachings of Christ, right? So they're really packed with meaning, right? Mm-hmm. You think you kind of understand, but then you can go deeper and like, whoa, sure. Like there's amazing things, like amazing ideas that are being put in here.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's read this. So, and this happens, the context is that somebody asked Jesus in response to the question of like, you know, Jesus saying you should love your neighbor as yourself. Somebody asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And Jesus replies, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these 3 do you think proved a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And then the response from the person who had been asking Jesus is the one who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, really powerful, you know, powerful answer to that question. Right. As Jesus would want to do. Right. So, you know, somebody asks him a question and Jesus kind of flips the question on its head. Mm-hmm. Right. So the answer here that Jesus gets to is your neighbor is the one who showed mercy to you. Right. Your neighbor is the one, you know, this guy was looking for like, well, who is the neighbor? Who's the person I'm supposed to love and do kindness to? And it's like, well, maybe you're thinking about it all wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. But, and by the way, this is the version we're reading is from the Gospel of Luke. So I think the parallel here that to Paige's point is you've got first the priest, right? So this would have been like a temple priest, comes along and sees this man on the side of the road and doesn't do anything to help him, passes by on the other side. And then a Levite was basically like kind of, it was also a very like religious person. It was also a, in Judaism, it's like a specific tribe that was called out to be kind of like that. Like the priests came from the Levites, right? Came
right.
from amongst the mm-hmm. Levites is my mm-hmm. understanding.
Yes.
And so a Levite was like, you know, also like kind of, you would think of it as like a very religious person, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Samaritan, and the Samaritan in this idea was like, the Samaritans were actually kind of like looked down upon by the religious people of the time, right? In some cases, right? So, so the idea here is that this Samaritan ended up being the neighbor to the man, right? Ended up being the one who showed him true mercy and true love, right? Even though you may not have expected that from him.
Right, he would have been the least expected.
And I really like this parallel that Paige draws here because, mm-hmm. you know, you can think of, like, she says Gandalf, you know, it doesn't show up.
Gandalf is kind of like a priestly figure.
Exactly, yeah. And then you have the elves that they interact with but don't really offer them much concrete help or advice.
Who would have been completely able to help them.
Right, and you can kind of think of them like Levites, mm-hmm. right? And then mm-hmm. and then you have Farmer Maggot, who maybe they weren't expecting to get much help from, and they maybe kind of viewed with some suspicion. I think, in fact, mm-hmm. they do. They're kind of like, oh, I'm a little scared of him, right? But he ends up being the one that takes them in and shows them true hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had never made that connection before, but that's a really...
That's really great.
That feels like a pretty solid connection. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if Tolkien intended that, but that is a really... you know, beautiful connection there. Now, to be fair to Gandalf, there were good reasons, I think, he didn't, you know, he wasn't there to be their aid. So
it's not like he walked by and refused to help.
I think if Gandalf had been able to be there, he would have done
for
everything
sure.
he could have.
He would have, yeah.
You know, maybe the criticism is a little more appropriate towards the elves. I don't know. You know, they're elves. They roll how they will.
Because they can.
They weren't like unfriendly to him. You know, it's not like they ignored him. But it's definitely Farmer Maggot who ends up, you know, really helping them in a very meaningful way right here. So
for sure.
I love that connection. I'm personally pretty moved by it because I think this is a lesson we sorely need in this world of intrigue and power plays. Sometimes help does come from the unexpected places, and the idea of the unexpected seems to be a key theme of Tolkien's.
It's that eucatastrophe.
Right. Yes. You know, even the role the hobbits play, like our discussion mm-hmm. of the hobbits being like some kind of mysterious work of Iluvatar, right?
Mm, yeah.
That all too often we look for help from places we'd expect, but either those sources are actually unhelpful, or we miss out on the unexpected source that may be exactly what we need. And this is a very Christian theme, for Christianity teaches that mankind's ultimate salvation, redemption, and blessedness comes from the most unexpected place. The helpless one, the backwater, the forgotten, the small, right? Christ mm-hmm. came into the world as, you know, a helpless little baby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So hobbits obviously reflect this idea in a major way.
You know, it's interesting to think, this thought just popped in my head, the man that the Samaritan ended up helping was clearly unconscious, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he was left for dead.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think, if he had not been unconscious, would he have been willing even to accept help from a Samaritan?
Yeah, wow.
You know? I mean, it's like, because that just made me think of it when you mentioned that, you know, all too often we look for help from places we'd expect and not from the unexpected. And oftentimes we're not even willing to accept help from unexpected places mm-hmm. because it's, I don't know if it's, that's something that's rooted in pride or just makes us uncomfortable. I don't know. But I think it speaks highly to Frodo and mm-hmm. his companions that he was willing to accept help from the farmer, even though he may have been, you know, like social class wise, he may have been, he's probably beneath Frodo. I mean, Frodo was a pretty right. well-to-do hobbit, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I mean, kudos to Frodo too for being willing to accept that help, even though it probably wasn't the help that maybe he was looking for or maybe wanted. He probably would have been much more comfortable with Gandalf or the elves.
This is true. All of these things are true. Yeah. That's a great point there as well. So, and it gets back to this, you know, this ultimate theme of like, you know, the unexpected, you know, the very first chapter of Middle-earth storytelling, right? The unexpected journey, right?
Yes. Yep.
Or I'm sorry, an unexpected party was
well,
what it was.
Unexpected something or other, yeah.
Yeah, and then of course the Hobbit movie became an unexpected journey, but the unexpected, right?
The unexpected, that's a constant theme here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So beautiful. I love it,
yeah,
Paige. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
That was fantastic, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, still no big news in the world of Tolkiendom, and especially in terms of the Lord of the Rings on Prime, Latron Prime. We're waiting with bated breath to hear more. And I'm looking forward to, hopefully, first episodes of that show in 2021. I will say I've recently begun dipping my toes into Lord of the Rings Online, as well as the Lord of the Rings card game, which, of course, we did the Card Talk episode
mm-hmm.
Several months ago with the guys from Card Talk. And I just want to throw out there, like, I think these things are a lot of fun. They're kind of things I wish I had more time to devote to and would love to have more time to devote to, quite honestly. And I just putting this out there, if anybody is interested in, you know, listening to me, like, talk about this more, you know, I'm just trying to get a feel for that. So, you know, drop us a line if you are. So, you know, I think it, you know, might be a fun little excursion to spend some time in Lord of the Rings Online or something like that.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Greta, you ready to get down to business?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, on this episode, we're discussing the events spanning Third Age 1977 through Third Age 2480. With Arnor fallen and Gondor in decline and under increasing attacks from outside, it's looking bad for Numenorean civilization. But it's also during this period that we see the rise of the Rohirrim, the founding of Erebor, and the forming of the White Council, amongst other important events and trends. So...
super.
Yeah. Interesting little period we got coming up here, Greta.
Yeah, I'm starting to recognize more names and events and things.
Yeah, definitely not as foreign as it once was, but there's still mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, as I've been researching for this series of episodes, I've just been struck by, again, how deep and rich, like, all of this imaginary history is. It's incredible.
It is. It really, it's like, there's no way to fathom the depth.
I know,
it's so extensive.
I thought I was pretty knowledgeable,
mm-hmm.
but I just feel like such an amateur,
yeah.
you know?
If you feel like an amateur, imagine how I feel.
Well, it's possible that
idiot.
Yeah, a lot of folks, you know, listening probably, you know, probably feel the same way. But of course, there are those listeners who listen to us and then they'll send us nice notes and be like, well, actually, this, you know, this is the whole story there. Actually, you got this wrong. And, you know, yeah. Which just increasingly makes me be like, man, how am I even worthy to be doing a podcast on this stuff? But
it's because we don't take ourselves too seriously.
We don't take ourselves too seriously. But we take Tolkien very seriously.
We take Tolkien very seriously.
And we appreciate everything he has to say.
Yes.
So all that being said, let's talk about this period. So really we left off and the big event that ended the last kind of block of years that we looked at was the fall of Arnor, the Numenorean kingdom in the north of Middle-earth. So, you know, really what that does is it leaves this big power vacuum in, in the north. So we're going to be looking at what happens there, but also continue to look at what's happening in Gondor as well. So in the year Third Age 1977, Frumgar, it says, leads the Aotheiad into the north.
So this, I'm sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
Is this like right after where we left off?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It is, right. So, again... like a lot of this stuff probably won't seem familiar still, but hopefully some of it increasingly does.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have a guess as to who Greta the Aotheiad are?
The Aotheiad. Is that maybe the Rohirrim?
It's the predecessor, like it's basically their ancestors.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So, and the Aotheiad did not live in Rohan, right? Like what we know of as Rohan, right? So, the Aotheiad lived in the Vales of Anduin, right?
Okay.
Which were, kind of close to Mirkwood. So, further north, right? Further north.
Okay.
If you're looking at, you know, here's Rohan. Here's our Third Age map of Rohan. And then they would have lived, like, up in this area, right? Maybe near, you know, getting up closer to Lorien and on the, on the western side of Mirkwood, I think the western side of Mirkwood. Anyway, so it says Frumgar leads the Aotheiad into the north.
Do we know who Frumgar is?
Yeah, so pulling that up here.
Okay.
Frumgar, it says, and a lot of these references are going to go to Tolkien Gateway, thanks to the work that's been done by many over at Tolkien Gateway. Frumgar was the fourth lord of the Aotheiad and the grandson of Forthwini. During his youth, the Aotheiad lived in the Vales of Anduin near Mirkwood Forest. It was a dangerous area beleaguered by the creatures of the Necromancer at Dol Guldur. However, in Third Age 1975, the evil kingdom of Angmar was destroyed, freeing up land to the north. In Third Age 1977, Frumgar led the Aotheiad to the Vale beyond the rivers Greylin and Langwell. Alright, so the Greylin and Langwell, these were rivers in the far north of Middle-earth. So they actually move to the north, right? They move even further north than they already were, right? So up into this region, kind of between the northern part of Mirkwood and the Misty Mountains. I believe that's the region we're talking about. It says, the Greylin rose in the western Grey Mountains and flows southwestward to meet the Langwell, and together they form the source of the great river Anduin. Yeah, so it's like up here in this region. So that's interesting to think about. Like, these people who are the predecessors of the Rohirrim, they first migrated from, you know, this place here to the west of Mirkwood, further north.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they migrated further away from where they would eventually end up when we know them as the Rohirrim.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So
they took the scenic route.
You know, and of course, we're not going to spend too much time on any one event that comes up in this timeline, because our goal here is to do kind of an overview of all of these things. And but I've been so excited and energized by doing this, because I just feel like there's all of this lore that we can explore
Absolutely.
In future episodes.
So we're kind of like building a framework.
Yeah.
For future episodes, maybe.
And like, for example, we'll probably come back to the Rohirrim and do a whole series on them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We've already done an episode on the Rohirrim when we did the appendix that applies to them. But I don't think we got back into their early history, like when they were the Aotheiad, right? So it'll be fun to, you know, come back to them eventually, because I know they are a very popular subject with a lot of people, including us.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes.
All right. Third Age, 1979, Booka of the Marish becomes first Thane of the Shire. Booka of the Marish.
Booka.
Yes. So, Booka. Let's talk about Booka.
Is that how we say it? Booka? Because it looks like, you know, that restaurant, Booka de Beppo. Booka de Beppo. I never know how to say it, so maybe I've been saying it wrong all this time.
I would have always said it Booka. Booka. But, Booka.
Booka.
Booka. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, again, always up for the corrections on the pronunciations. So
he looks like a hobbit.
Well, that's because he is. Booka of the Marish was the first Thane of the hobbits in Eriador.
Is Thane a leader?
Yes. So the Thane, right? The Thane is a term that actually comes up in both, I believe, in both The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
I know it's mentioned with regards to the dwarves.
No.
It's not?
You're thinking of Thrain, one of the dwarves.
That's an easy leaders. Mistake to make. Forgive me, people.
I can see why you made that mistake, yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, the Thane, it says, was an office of great respect in the Shire. The Thane was master of the Shire moot and captain of the Shire muster and hobbitry and arms.
Okay, so it's a term specific to Shire folk.
Right. It's almost like it's almost like the king of the Shire, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, and apparently, it, you know, again, this would be another interesting topic to give a deep dive to, but, you know, it was founded, and this office was founded because the because Arnor had fallen, right? Because Arnor and kind of its descendant kingdoms had been, like, they had kind of provided a protection to the Shire,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And when the Shire finally fell, it was like, okay, we kind of need our own.
No, not the Shire.
Yeah, to the
Shire. The Shire fell?
I'm sorry, not when the Shire fell. I'm sorry. When I meant the Shire was providing protection. When Arnor and its descendant kingdoms really fell, kind of that power.
Mm-hmm. Kind of that buffer.
Was providing protection for, you know, the people of the Shire.
It was
and
no
so,
longer there. So they needed kind of an authority figure. Okay.
Yeah. And Thane just simply means chief in their dialect. So Booka of the Marish, yes, he was the first Thane of the Hobbits in Eriador. So... the Marish was a fertile but boggy farmland region in the east farthing of the Shire. So
that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Kind of sounds like marsh. So
yeah.
Okay.
So that's that. All right. Third Age, 1980. The Witch King comes to Mordor, and there gathers the Nazgul. A Balrog appears in Moria, and there slays Durin the Sixth. So the Witch King, of course, had been defeated in the north, even as on. Even as Arnor falls, Angmar, of course, which was ruled by the Witch King, is defeated as well, and so he returns to Mordor, and there kind of begins gathering all the Nazgul, and this is also when the Balrog that we will see eventually in Lord of the Rings appears in Moria. And, and so it's going back along. I mean, this is 1,000 years before, you know, Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Third Age, 1981, Nain the First is slain. The dwarves flee from Moria. Many of the Sylvan Elves of Lorien flee south. All right, so, you know, this is the year that Moria, is really... abandoned, and so the dwarves are, you know, the dwarves are on the look. We're looking for another home after this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
So, the dwarves they flee, and then many of the Sylvan Elves of Lorien flee south, right? So, what we're increasingly seeing is that the Misty Mountains, where Moria lies and everything, are becoming, you know, more and more important to this story, right? Really the strategizing of the powers of Middle-earth, including
mm-hmm.
Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Sylvan Elves of Lorien flee south, and then we see this note, Amroth and Nimrodel are lost. So, you might remember this from when we read Lord of the Rings, but there's this song that Legolas sings called the Song of Nimrodel, and this is about, it concerns a... it concerns these two figures, Amroth and Nimrodel, who are elvish figures that are kind of like a tragic pair of lovers, right? So we discussed this poem, and again, we won't get into it too much on this episode, but it's something that we'll likely come back to and do a deep dive on this particular topic, right?
So these were real elves?
Yes.
They were. So yeah. When it says that they were lost, does that mean that they died or they left? Like, what does that mean?
We'll just have to see, right? But I think maybe their fate isn't known. I haven't researched it enough to speak to that.
Okay.
Let me see if I can just find a little bit on it here.
I was just curious. That's, yeah. Okay, honestly, I didn't. When I first read that, I thought they were objects, not people.
Nimrodel was the female, and it says she was lost searching for her lover, who was Amroth. And then Amroth was a Sindarin elf, and he was the last king of Lorien. And it says he drowned, right?
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that song that Legolas sings is it's a tribute, or it's about those two people.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's a tribute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Then we are off to Thrain the First comes to Erebor and founds a dwarf kingdom under the mountain. So of course this is the great kingdom we know from The Hobbit, right? The great king under the kingdom under the mountain of Erebor. Founded in Third Age 1999, and we see its connection because of this timeline to the loss of Moria, right? It's 19 years after the it's 18 years after they flee Moria, the dwarves flee Moria because of the Balrog, and then they found this new kingdom in Erebor.
Like, geographically, where is Erebor with relation to where Moria was?
Yeah, so we're looking at our map. So Moria is like right here in the, it's to the west of Lorien in the Misty Mountains.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then Erebor is over here to the northeast, right? Across Mirkwood to the northeast.
That's a good distance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not, you can think about like, Bilbo and the dwarves have to traverse through Mirkwood. I mean, they basically have to traverse over the Misty Mountains, or under the Misty Mountains eventually, into, through Mirkwood to Erebor, right?
Right. Okay, and that's where they're going in The Hobbit.
And they had a pretty far way to go, and it's even farther from Lorien, from this region, to Erebor. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Right on.
And that is the destination in The Hobbit. Right?
Erebor.
Yeah. Okay.
The Lonely Mountain. That's correct.
Gotcha.
So, 1999, Erebor is founded. 2000, the Nazgul issue from Mordor and besiege Minas Ithil. Right? So, Minas Ithil, in case our listeners don't realize, is what in Lord of the Rings is known as Minas Morgul. Right? You know, it's really interesting because so many of the places that maybe we associate with being evil places from Lord of the Rings often began, almost, I would say majority of them began as like constructions or cities of what we would think of as like good forces, right? Like, so of Gondor or of Arnor or of, some other like Numenorean force in particular, or an Elvish force, right? So, Minas Ithil, of course, that means the Tower of the Moon, and it's that city that's on the western slopes. It really sits at the western slopes of the mountains to the west of Mordor, right on the western border of Mordor. So it's kind of like the first watch point, against against an army coming over from Mordor into the regions of Gondor, right? So its loss is pretty significant, and they change it from Minas Ithil, they change the name from Minas Ithil
the bad
to
guys do.
Minas Morgul, right?
Yeah.
Eventually. So, it actually happens from 2000 to 2002. They besiege it. The Nazgul besiege it in 2000, and then in 2002, Minas Ithil falls and is known as Minas Morgul. Now, the Palantir, because they remember there were those seven seeing stones, the seven Palantiri, that were located in different strategic places throughout Gondor and Arnor. Well, that's how Sauron gets his Palantir.
Because there was one at Minas Ithil.
There was one at Minas Ithil, right?
Okay.
That's how Sauron gets the Palantir that he uses, that we see him using in Lord of the Rings.
Gotcha.
Right.
And that's the one that in Lord of the Rings that Merry or Pippin
No, it's
ends up
no.
Using?
That's not the one. That's,
oh, but it's one of the ones.
But all the Palantir are connected, right?
Gotcha.
So you can see the other, like you can see through the other one, you know, to the other ones through the one you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's actually, you know, we learn that's like how Saruman. That's one of the ways like Saruman is corrupted, because he finds one in Isengard much later, and uses it and kind of gets contacted with Sauron, in contact with Sauron, right?
Gotcha. Yep.
So, all right. jumping forward 40 years, 2043, Yarnur becomes Kingdom of Gondor. I get carried away with all these extra syllables. Yarnur becomes King of Gondor. He is challenged by the Witch King. All right, so...
I know it's true because it rhymes.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Isn't it... Is it Gant? That character... No, it's not Gandalf. Gandalf is in the Lego movie, but...
Isn't it Emmett that says that?
No, it's the... isn't it the character that's voiced by Morgan Freeman? He's kind of a Gandalfish figure.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I forget the name of the character, though.
Yep.
Yeah, so 2050, the challenge is renewed. Yarnur rides to Minas Morgul and is lost. All right, so this is significant because... Yarnur is the last king of Gondor, right? He's the last king of Gondor. So this is where the line of stewards begins, right?
Okay.
With Denethor, and then, you know, Denethor being the father of Boromir
Faramir.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So when we meet Denethor, he is in the line of these ruling stewards of Gondor, right?
Gotcha.
They're not the leaders of you know, they're not in the line of kings. They're in the line of the stewards. So this is the year.
So is it different?
What do you mean?
So Denethor would not have been descended from Yarnur.
No. Denethor was definitely not descended from Yarnur, right?
So the king, the line just dies out with it, like he didn't have any sons,
right?
Or?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So when Aragorn comes along later, he's actually descended from the line of the kings in Arnor, right?
I see.
So,
okay.
So you know, Aragorn isn't just restored as the king of Gondor. He's restored as restored as the king of Arnor, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. So, Mardil becomes the first ruling steward.
And that's because the Witch King wins.
Yes, the Witch King kills Yarnur, and I suppose Yarnur didn't have any descendants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, 2060, the power of Dol Guldur grows. All right, so Dol Guldur, of course, being the, you know, this place in the south part of Mirkwood where Sauron will frequently come and, you know, try to project his power from, try to plot and project his power from. So Dol Guldur, you know, I was curious, like, where did Dol Guldur come from? Because you do hear about it quite a bit. In the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, or at least in Lord of the Rings, I don't know. We actually, even though it's important during this story of during the time of the Hobbit, I'm not sure we hear much about it. Regardless of what the movies say, so Dol Guldur was originally known as Aman Lonk Bald, which means Bald Hill, and it was located in Greenwood the Great. It had been the capital of Orofer's Sylvan Elves, who had departed north to the Dark Mountains, later known as the Mountains of Mirkwood. Somewhere after Third Age 1000, an evil presence took over Aman Lonk. It was in 1050 that a shadow fell upon Greenwood, and it began to be called Mirkwood. So, anyway, Dol Guldur, again, we see this theme of, like, it was not originally a place of, you know, that we consider evil, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like maybe Barad-dûr, right? Where it was specifically created for an evil purpose.
Mm-hmm. But it was corrupted by evil forces.
It was created by, like, a good force, by the mm-hmm. elves, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, at least what we think of as a good force. And then abandoned and used by mm-hmm. Sauron for his own purposes,
okay.
right? So that is where Dol Guldur came from.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, 2210, Thorin the First leaves Erebor. Now... This is not... Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot something in 2063. Let's see. So, a couple of things I forgot to mention. First, the power... I know. First, the power of Dol Guldur grows. The wise fear that it may be Sauron taking shape again. So even in 2060, they're kind of aware that Sauron may be back, right? This is 1,000 years before Lord of the Rings, right? So really when it comes to Lord of the Rings, they're not super surprised, and maybe they're surprised about like how out and about he is, but that we'll talk about that later. So let's see. Gandalf goes to Dol Guldur in 2063. Sauron retreats and hides in the east. The Watchful Peace begins. The Watchful Peace is this period that lasts for 400 years. Okay, so the Watchful, it says on Tolkien Gateway, it says the Watchful Peace was a relatively peaceful 4th century period during the Third Age. From Third Age 2063, when Sauron, then known as the Necromancer, fled from Dol Guldur to hide himself from the Wise. That was until Sauron returned in 2460, which we'll see here shortly. But so there was this, you know, with Gandalf comes, he goes to Dol Guldur, scares Sauron away, and there's this Watchful Peace of 400 years.
Right? But Sauron's not gone, he's just hiding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Nazgul remain quiet in Minas Morgul. And, you know, this is something that, I mean, Sauron had done before, right? In the Second Age, you know, there he had gone through times where he was quieter with respect to the Numenoreans, and he was really biding his time and making his plans. And, you know, like, I mean, it's really, he probably learned this from Morgoth, right? Because Morgoth, you know, there was that period of the siege the siege of Morgoth's castle, which I'm kicking myself for not being able to remember the name of right now. Angband, Siege of Angband. Thanks, Greta. So
no problem.
Thanks for slipping me that piece of paper
sure,
right there.
Sure. That's why I'm here.
So the Siege of Angband, Morgoth, of course, kept quiet for a long time and then finally kind of unleashed himself, right? A big flood of, you know, flame and death.
Destruction.
Right? And destruction.
Yep.
Okay. So this seems to be a tactic of these Dark Lords, right? Mm-hmm. This is how they like to rule.
He's kind of like lulling them into like a false sense of security.
That's a good way of putting
it. I mean, 400 years, that's a long time. You know, you probably are on guard, like you're on watch probably, maybe for the first 50, maybe. But then you start to get comfortable. You're like, ah, okay.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, it seems like a long time for people like us, and even for people who are descended from the Numenoreans who may have a lifespan three times of us,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
That might seem like, oh, you know, who cares, right? Like, that's just legend. That stuff's just legend, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But further you get away from it, it's easier to not remember or, you know, have any respect for the events of the past.
Absolutely. Well, in Sauron, you know, he's been around since the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. He's a Maiar, so he was there at, you know, at the creation of Arda, right? He was there in the music of the Ainur, and who knows how many thousand year spans elapsed before the elves even came along. That's kind of an interesting question, is like, you know, how many ages of ages were there before, you know, elves and eventually men came along, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Sauron and Gandalf and a few others have longer memories than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So.
Truth.
All right. And it also says the Nazgul remain quiet in Minas Morgul in 2063.
Probably because Sauron told them to.
Yeah.
Yep.
Guys, just shut up. I'm planning something. But we want to go destroy Gondor.
Oh, that was kind of creepy.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's...
I was possessed.
That was definitely...
Possessed
there.
Had to clear my throat,
had
sorry.
Had to clear your throat. Yeah, that's probably exactly how it played out, though.
Yeah.
You know? And then he was like, no, you will remain quiet. And they were like, okay.
Yeah.
If you say so, Sauron, sir.
You're the boss.
Right?
You are the boss.
He's kind of scary when he wants to be. And even when he doesn't want to be, he's still scary.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean,
yeah,
Sauron, he's kind of
scary
all the time.
Dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess except when he's charming and, you know, lures you into taking a ring and being like, hey, we can be buddies.
Well, yeah, anyway. Except then. Yep.
Yeah.
True.
All right. 2210. So we actually jump forward about 150 years to this next entry on the timeline. Thorin the First leaves Erebor and goes north to the Grey Mountains, where most of the remnants of Durin's folk are now gathering. So, Thorin the First, not Thorin Oakenshield. Thorin Oakenshield is Thorin the Second.
Okay. So is this his dad?
No.
Oh.
This is not his dad. His dad
his
was
grandfather.
Thrain.
Oh.
And his grandfather was Thror.
So it's his great-great-grandfather.
Well, let's look. Let's see how far back it goes. How far back Thorin the First goes. Dwarves are another one we'll do much. We need to do much more.
Yeah, we do. We need to do a deep dive on dwarves. Yeah.
But we actually did, you know, that's another one where, like Rohan, we discussed the chapter on the dwarves or the appendix on the dwarves from Lord of the Rings, but there's probably more that could be said about them. So anyway, we got Thorin, Thorin the First here, and then Gloin and Oin, who are not the Gloin and Oin from The Hobbit. Again, like the names, just like other names, these names tend to be repeated. So let's see, Thorin, Gloin, Oin, Nine the Second, Dine the First, Thror, Thrain, Second, Thorin, Second, Oakenshield. All right, so father, grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. So five greats.
Mm-hmm.
Five greats.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And considering how long dwarves live, mm-hmm. that's a lot of years. That's a lot of generations.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, looking at some of these lifespans here, mm-hmm. and a lot of times these the dwarves are killed.
Well, that's true.
You know, yeah. killed in action or mm-hmm. something like that. But, yeah, I mean, we'll look, you know, Thrain the First, who was Thorin the First's father, was 200 years old when he died, and I'm not even sure that he didn't die in battle. And then, you know, a lot of these others, I mean, they live 100 years before they die, at least. So, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of time that elapses between Thorin the First and Thorin Oakenshield.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, so Thorin leaves Erebor and goes north to the Grey Mountains, where most of the remnants of Durin's folk are now gathering. I'm not really sure why he left, but maybe we'll learn about that some other time. 2340, jumping forward 130 years, Isumbras the First becomes 13th Thane of the Shire and first of the Took Line. The Old Bucks occupy the Buckland. So I believe that the first Thane, who we talked about, Bukka of the mm-hmm. Marish, right? So that's one interesting note. So Bukka, I remember reading this. Bukka was actually the he was like a forefather of the Brandy Bucks, right? So someday we're gonna do an episode on the Shire and all of the like families and everything that are important families,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But Bukka was basically like you know, we think of Mary, right, as a Brandy Buck, mm-hmm. right? And he comes from Buckland, right? So Bukka is like the predecessor. He's like an early, person from Buckland, or maybe the founder of Buckland, or something like that, right?
So he's a very distant relative right. of Mary.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and I believe of you know, there's a lot of like, you know, these families all intermarry
yeah.
over time. So I think it'd be interesting yeah. to like look at family trees on all this. And I know some of those things are in Lord of the Rings appendices. But now we have a Took, right? We have the Took mm-hmm. line being established. And we of course know that Bilbo and Frodo are both descended from, at least Bilbo is, or descended from Tooks on, Bilbo is descended from a Took on his mother's side.
And that's the side that's, or it's the Tooks that are credited with the sense of adventure, right?
Yes, the Tookish side. That's correct. Yeah. Good point. Let's see here. Frodo. Let's look at Frodo's ancestry to see if, let's see, Frodo. Yeah, he's got a Brandy Buck on his mother's side.
I thought we were talking about Tooks.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right, I'm sorry. I got confused. You keep me on the right track.
I do.
Right.
I do.
This stuff gets. I mean.
Oh, I know. It's tricky. It's tricky.
Make your head spin. Right.
Make your eyes cross.
So, Frodo descended from the Brandy Bucks on his mother's side.
But
right.
Bilbo has Took in him.
Right. Belladonna. His mother was Belladonna Took.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So the Thane goes over to the Took line, and the Old Bucks occupy the Buckland, it says. So,
who are the Old Bucks?
I guess those are the descendants of
the
Bukka.
The Brandy Bucks?
Of Bukka, right?
Oh, okay. Sure.
I would guess that's what that
was.
I mean,
he
let's
Bukka
look it up
Old
here.
Buck? Was that his name?
No, his name was Bukka, right? That's where
was Bukka his last name?
Well, I don't know, but maybe they just took their name from this people took their name from him because, let's see, The Old Buck family was an ancient family of Shire hobbits who went on to become one of the most well-known families of the Shire. Consisting of mainly Storish blood, the members of this prosperous family came from the Marish, where they traced their heritage to one Bukka of the Marish. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So Bukka is the father of the Old Buck.
So, you know, sometimes a lot of these things are in here and they can seem like, well, why is that important? And, you know, mm-hmm. we're trying to help connect some of those dots, and sometimes we're connecting those dots for ourselves too, right?
Yeah.
So Bukka, I guess, was the original Buck, right? He was the original of the people of Buckland, of, you know, the Brandy Bucks, and this sort of thing.
Okay.
And so when we talk about the Old Bucks, that's like kind of the, I guess that's like the predecessor of the Brandy Bucks, right? These are the people that really, you know, established Buckland. So,
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. 2460. The Watchful Peace ends. Remember that it started about 400 years before. Sauron returns with increased strength to Dol Guldur, so he's back.
He's making his move.
Yeah. Well, he is making a move,
right? A move. One of many moves.
You know, and again, like, this is 500 years before the events of Lord of the Rings. About 550 years, actually. So, you know, he's going to make more moves eventually, but this is, you know, even before we get to Lord of the Rings, like, they knew that Sauron was a force to be reckoned with, even though they thought they had defeated him all those years ago at the Last Alliance of Men and Elves. 2463, the White Council is formed, right? The White Council is, of course, that little group of really, really wise people, right? Saruman, Gandalf, Galadriel, Elrond, and Círdan, right? And Saruman was supposed to be the leader of the council. So, yeah.
Okay.
So then their whole purpose is to get together, because they know Sauron's up to no good, and their purpose is to, like, okay, what do we do about Sauron? Right?
Right.
What do we do to keep him from, you know, doing the bad stuff that he does?
So who did you just say who it was made up of, besides Gandalf?
Yeah. So it's Saruman, Gandalf, Galadriel, Elrond, and Círdan.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So elves and Maiar, right?
Elves and Maiar, that's correct. Okay. Yeah.
I thought it was just Maiar. I didn't realize, I forgot that there was elves in there.
Yeah, well, elves and Istari, I mean, we can be more specific than calling them Maiar. But,
okay.
You kind of wonder, like, where are the other, like, did they not invite Radagast?
Right, I know, I was wondering the same thing, yeah.
Radagast was like, no, I'm just going to stay home and play with my rabbits.
Yeah, right.
Right. smoke some pipe weed.
This stuff's too serious for me.
Yeah.
Keep me out of all the drama,
please.
I mean,
who even knows where the Blue Wizards were at this point? Yeah, it's like they were just went into the east somewhere, and who even knows?
Just living the good life. Staying out of the drama.
Yeah.
Can't blame them. I don't like to be in the midst of drama either.
I mean, I got to be honest. I probably would have rolled like the Blue Wizards.
I totally would have rolled like the Blue Wizards.
I probably would have gotten here, and but, you know, it's like, you know, you're sent on a mission from the Blessed Realm, and they're like, you need to go over to Middle Earth and help these people against Sauron. And I get over here and be like, wow, there's a lot of just wide open space.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to travel some. Yeah.
I have faith in Gandalf. Gandalf's got this. He doesn't need me.
Yeah. Gandalf can take care of this.
Yeah, he can totally take care of it.
Gandalf's got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would have been the same. I would have done the same thing. I've been like, peace out, peeps. I'm on call if you need me, but try not to call me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's see. So the White Council is formed 2463, and then Smeagol murders Daegle, right? About this time, Daegle the Store finds the One Ring and is murdered by Smeagol, a.k.a. Gollum.
Gosh, I didn't realize Gollum was that old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's 500-plus years old.
Dang, that's why he looks so terrible.
Yeah. Well, and the lack of sunlight probably doesn't help much either.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. All lack, that evil lack of vitamin stuff. D. Lack of vitamin D. And too much one ringness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
I just didn't realize that went back that far.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, like, the White Council is formed this year. And the same year that Smeagol murders Daegle to get the One Ring, and that Sauron returns to Dol Guldur, because this all, you know, Smeagol's murder of Daegle happens in this Gladden Fields area, right? Because that's where the ring was lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this little region just north of Lorien to the east of the Misty Mountains, that's where Smeagol's people live, and that's where he murders Daegle.
Mm-hmm.
And Dol Guldur, of course, is just over here. It's just, you know, across the Anduin River to the southeast, and on the edge of Mirkwood, right there in the south. So, you know, Sauron comes back, and it's almost like the ring kind of like senses he's back. So while Sauron is close, the ring thinks to itself, "It's time for someone to come get me. It's time for," and then it'll be easier for Sauron to then get hold of me again. So
it's crazy, that connection.
Yeah,
they have with one another.
Well, it's similar to the one that happened way back in what was it, like 10 or 1060? It was around 1050 when it was apex of Gondor's power. Then the shadow falls on Greenwood and Mirkwood. The Perionoth are first mentioned. You get the arrival of the Istari, right? So all of these things happen in 1 year, and you know, it's interesting how, after reading that, it's interesting how the hobbits are always some way involved in this, right? At least the Perionoth, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know Smeagol is not like kind of typically thought of as being a hobbit, but they all have that origin as the Perionoth, right? And so it's interesting how the Perionoth again are connected to this event 1400 years later, right? That they're the ones who happen to find this. So again, it just kind of gives you that idea that they were, that their existence is almost the special intervention of a maybe Iluvatar himself, right?
Yeah. Right.
This little unforeseen matter, right? Unforeseen thing.
Yeah.
So
working everything out.
That's right. That's right. All right. So then we get 2470, jumping forward a few years. Smeagol hides in the Misty Mountains, and this
why
is, of
do you
course,
think he chose the Misty Mountains?
Because they were close, right? They're the closest ones, so they're the easiest place for him to hide.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, and then 2475, lost my place. There we go. The attack on Gondor was renewed, and that's talking about the attack by the forces of Mordor, right? So by like the Nazgul, and Osgiliath is finally ruined and its stone bridge broken. Osgiliath is one of those places that I think would be interesting to do a deep dive on in the history of it as a place. But this was once, of course, the capital city of Gondor, right? It's the old capital of Gondor. And so this loss is it's got to be pretty brutal for the people of Gondor.
Yeah, significant.
Right?
Yeah.
And then 2480, circa 2480, it says, orcs begin to make secret strongholds in the Misty Mountains so as to bar all the passes into Eriador. Sauron begins to people Moria with his creatures. So it's clear that Sauron saw the Misty Mountains, like it was almost like a strategy for him to make the Misty Mountains a difficult thing to cross,
mm-hmm.
right? That if he could keep the east and the west separated, it's almost like this like Berlin Wall kind of thing, you know, if we can keep these two places separated from each other, then it'll be easier for me to control the east without intervention from the west. But just the very act of keeping these two geographical places disunified, mm-hmm. and hard to unify, makes it easier for me to achieve my goals in
right.
the long run.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Because a kingdom divided against itself will not stand.
Yes.
Cannot stand.
Speaking of which... you brought that up a few episodes ago, and I think we attributed it to Abraham Lincoln. And as you were saying that, I thought to myself, I think Jesus said that first. And our buddy David Bates sent me a message and said he basically confirmed that. And I didn't. I almost knew it was true, but I didn't want to say anything on the episode because Lincoln does quote it. And
okay,
you know, but it took our friend of British ancestry to point that out to point out our American blindness and attributing that to Lincoln, like he originally, you know, came up with that idea. So
in a way that sounds appropriate,
right?
Thank you, David.
Yes.
So where is it? One of the Gospels.
I think it's in Matthew.
Matthew.
Yeah, he actually. Let me see if I can find his message here.
I was just.
It'll only take me a second.
That tickles me.
Yeah, well, as soon as he sent it, I laughed out loud because I was like, yep, I thought that was right. So, not finding his original message.
Well,
oh, wait, here we go.
Cat's out of the bag, people. I know my American history better than I know my Bible. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Well, you'll survive.
You know, we all have our flaws.
It's okay. Here we go. It's he said Lincoln must have read Matthew 12 verses 22 through 28.
Ah. Well, yeah. Lincoln knew his Bible very well as well.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. As many did back in those days.
That's a true story.
All right. So that's where we're going to, you know, end our discussion for this episode. So we really see in all this that well before the events of Lord of the Rings, Sauron is already making a strong push to reestablish himself as one of the main powers in Middle-earth. Next time, we'll get the chance to look at the rise of Rohan and the coming of the dragons. So much more interesting stuff to come.
That sounds great.
In the Third Age.
Yeah. So looking forward to it.
Okay, time for some correspondence.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
I love correspondence.
Me too. It's always fun. It's great hearing from all the peeps.
Super fun. It always is, yeah.
All right. So, first of all, I wanted to follow up on some correspondence we discussed on the last episode with Tom McArdle. And we had shared a song he'd written, right, for a songwriting competition. And so he responded via tweet, and he said...
Oh, because we asked about
if he actually wrote music.
Because we had the lyrics, but no music, right.
Right. So he said... Thanks so much for sharing the lyrics of the song I wrote. Sadly, I missed the deadline of the challenge and did not record the music yet. I will send you a link when I do, but I am too much like Barlam and Butterbur at times, so it might be a while. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully it won't be too long, because I'm really excited to hear it.
I am too, yeah.
I mean, the words were just absolutely beautiful. I can only imagine them put to music.
The words were indeed beautiful, and yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing... the musical accompaniment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So keep us posted, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. All right. Let's get to some correspondence. The correspondence has been piling up, y'all. I'm sorry. You know, it's getting a little hard to keep up with.
That's a good problem to have,
it
though.
It is a good problem to have. I got kind of a backlog of correspondence, so I'm going to try to get caught up on a few of those on this episode. But if, you know, you wrote to us and we haven't responded yet in any form or fashion, please don't take that as like we don't want to respond or something like that. We're just kind of trying to get caught up on some stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the first piece of correspondence for this episode comes from David Bigwood.
Hey, David.
And David says, and this is actually from back in June. He said, this is in response to our episode 195 on the future of Middle-earth 2020 edition. He said, as for future retelling in different mediums, I'd love to see operas. The story of Feanor from the Oath to his death. Or Fingolfin's being left, crossing the ice and arriving at the rising of the sun. Tuor's journey from the sea to deliver the words of Ulmo to Turgon. So many grand sweeping stories would be possible. The slaying of Glaurung and the aftermath, Turin's whole story would be too long, I think. Lots of rich material there, just waiting for the right person to craft it.
Ooh, I love that idea.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never, listened to much opera. I don't know, have you?
Like, here and there.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot, though.
But I don't know. I mean, I'd certainly be... I think I've heard of, like, music, like, attempted musical... takes on Tolkien's works over the years.
Yeah, I think some people have sent some links in.
Yeah, some, like in terms of like kind of the you know, like stage musical.
Right. Yeah, but opera, that would be different.
And I've always been a little skeptical of the stage musical thing. I just don't know that that medium is the right one for, you know, for Tolkien. I don't know that he would have been a fan of that. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong. But I can possibly see him being into something more operatic, right? And I feel like the stories, especially like the stories of the First Age, feel like they could be very operatic.
Yeah, with that music, the music that could be associated with those stories, I think.
Sure.
That'd be a good fit. Yeah.
Yeah, cool observation there, David.
Totally. Thank you.
We also, I think, another one from David as well. This is in response to 197, which was on six spiritual insights from Tolkien that will change your life. He said, I think you might enjoy Dorothy Sayers' The Mind of the Maker. It is very like Tolkien's idea that we are made in the image of a maker, and so we make. The part about worth of work is full of insight. I noticed that there's an edition out with an introduction by Madeline L'Engle. I dearly love L'Engle's work. She had a wonderful way of showing holiness and goodness in the ordinary life. The Murray or Austin family having supper or walking in the woods and lying on a glacial erratic. I just might pick it up. Been too long since I've read any Sayers or L'Engle. So, yeah, I'm familiar with both of those writers, mm-hmm. at least their names. And I know L'Engle wrote A Wrinkle in Time.
Right.
And Dorothy Sayers. Dorothy Sayers was almost, I think, like a, I feel like she had an association with the Inklings of some sort.
Didn't she write some mysteries as well?
She may
like
have.
Like Gaudy Nights. I have that one on my Kindle. I just haven't read it yet.
Let's see here. Dorothy Sayers, she is best known for her mysteries, a series of novels and short stories set between the First and Second World Wars that feature English aristocrat and amateur sleuth Lord Peter Wimsey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I have not, like I said, I have Gaudy Nights on my Kindle. I just haven't dived into it. And I have read A Wrinkle in Time, but that's all I know of L'Engle so far. So,
yeah.
But that book sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to read more. I would love to read anything of Sayers, actually.
Yeah, let's see. I can see in with Sayers, it looks like she may have had a friendship with Charles Williams, who was one of the Inklings, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, based on their shared love of the Divine Comedy, of Dante's Divine Comedy.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So, interesting. Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that, David. You know, I think add that to the list, right? The Mind of the Maker, it definitely sounds like a an interesting essay, and maybe one that overlaps some with some of Tolkien's you know, important ideas of like subcreation and that sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. So. Good rec.
Awesome. All right. Next we have a note from Paul B. And Paul says, "Hello. Your podcast came up on my suggested feed, and I started downloading episodes that seemed interesting. I just finished your podcast on Tolkien and the Nazis, and I'm so glad that was my introduction to your work. I've also heard people try to co-opt Tolkien to fit their racist agenda, so your podcast was refreshing because I think at this particular moment in world history, we need to be resolute in being anti-racist. I also appreciated your ending comment about no writer being beyond criticism, because that is also true. I look forward to hearing more. Sincerely, Paul." P.S. I just started reading Tales from the Perilous Realm, and I'm about halfway through. I'm really enjoying it. Awesome.
Very cool.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you know, it was really important to me to do that episode and on Tolkien versus the Nazis. And I'm actually trying to put together a short video that kind of encompasses that to post on YouTube and maybe a few other places right now. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist when it comes to videos, but maybe be on the lookout for that. If you don't already subscribe to my YouTube channel, I am trying to do more over there, so you can find the YouTube channel at Tolkien Road. Just look for Tolkien Road Podcast and you'll find it. There actually might be two channels, and look for the one with more subscribers, because the one with less subscribers is not... I need to delete that. But the one with the more subscribers is the one that I'm trying to do more content on. But yeah, thanks, Paul. And I'm glad that you found that. And I hope you're continuing to enjoy the podcast.
Yes. What John said.
All right. Next note is from Andrew C. And this was from August 11th. Andrew says, "I just wanted to tell you how much I've been enjoying your walk through the Silmarillion. I've wanted to read the Silmarillion for years and even started it a few years back, but gave up about a quarter of the way through. Recently, I found your podcast and I've used it to guide me through the text. I'll read a chapter or two and then listen to your episodes discussing it. This has been so helpful in understanding the narrative. I also appreciate your willingness to broach the subject of religious themes in Tolkien's writing. It seems a lot of Tolkien fans steer clear of this. Being myself an adult convert to Catholicism, as I understand you are, I understand that it's impossible to separate Tolkien's writing from his faith, yet all too often it seems that's what people want to do. Thanks again for the great podcast. I look forward to walking through the Lord of the Rings with you next. By the way, I've added your book to my Amazon wishlist, so hopefully I'll be receiving it on or around December 25th.
Perfect.
Awesome.
That's great. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to hear from you. And then a comment from Jennifer on August 15th. Jennifer says, "The Secret Fire is a reference," and this is actually in response to the episode 203 on the first part of the history of the Third Age. She says, "The Secret Fire is a reference to the Flame Imperishable, which is the breath of life, but is also very much like the Holy Spirit. Yet it is possible that Saruman might have known that Gandalf was given Narya. He was secretly envious of Gandalf because Galadriel wanted Gandalf to be the leader of the White Council, and for other reasons. Here's a bit of news that you might not have heard. Sir Ian Holm died in June. He was 88 years old. I think he died from Parkinson's disease or an illness related to that. I still think his portrayal of Frodo was the best. I think she means Bilbo, right? Ian Holm portrayed Bilbo. My mother has the DVD of Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth, in which Ian Holm played one of the scribes in the temple. Interesting. Yeah, so Ian Holm, of course, was the actor who played the older Bilbo, right?
In
the Peter Jackson films.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so he had passed away in June. Yeah, he'd been on the scene for a long time. I don't think I did mention that when the news first broke, but of course, may he rest in peace, and we certainly appreciate all that he did to bring the character of Bilbo to life for us.
Yeah,
I think he may have had an association with another adaptation of one of Tolkien's works, and I'm not. Maybe he was the voice of Frodo on that seems to ring a bell, like on the BBC version of Lord of the Rings. I think he may have been
the animated one.
No, the radio version. I think
Okay.
I think he may have been the voice of Frodo. But if anybody knows the whole story on that, please correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. So and what you said about the Holy Spirit and the flame imperishable, I actually saw a reference to that where Tolkien actually may have said that explicitly, that the flame imperishable was meant to be the Holy Spirit. Let me see if I can.
This is something we talked about in the history of the Third Age,
right?
History.
Yeah. So, oh, here we go. This is on the Tolkien Gateway Secret Fire page. Inspiration. This is an alternate name of the Holy Spirit in Tolkien's mythos, like Eru in the name of God. Like Eru is the name of God. In Tolkien in the Silmarillion, Clyde S. Kilby refers to a discussion he had with Tolkien. Professor Tolkien talked to me at some length about the use of the word holy in the Silmarillion. Very specifically, he told me that the secret fire sent to burn at the heart of the world in the beginning was the Holy Spirit.
Oh.
So, apparently, according to Professor Clyde Kilby, that Tolkien made that claim directly. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your comments, Jennifer. Always good hearing from you. All right. I think that about wraps it up for our correspondence for this week. We'd love to hear from any and all of you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, through the website, via comments or the contact form, Facebook, Twitter, etc. If you find a way to get a hold of us, then we will probably do our best to respond to you.
At some point. Yes.
Yeah. Be patient.
Be patient. Be hasty.
Don't be hasty.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So, yeah, I think that about wraps it up for this episode, Greta.
Very, very good. I enjoyed that.
So come back around for episode 207 when we'll hit The History of Middle-Earth, Part 5, Third Age 2480 through Third Age 2770. Shout out to our patrons. Thank you so much, especially the following: Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Daniel.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Jules.
Eric B.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
And Matt L.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, guys.
And we will talk at you next time.
Yes, we will.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.